Artists Rose Franson and Chuck Morris have made Maquoketa their home, their workplace, and an artistic destination. This hour, we'll visit their newest exhibit, In the Face of Illusion, their gallery, and Rose's studio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Maquoketa seems like an unlikely destination for two very successful artists who met in New York City, but Rose Franson and Chuck Morris have built their lives in Maquoketa and made a deep mark on the community.
And I have watched this community grow all the way to accepting even a challenging show like this. And so it's possible that you can grow and the community can grow with you.
I'll talk with Rose and Chuck and see their provocative new show. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and right now I am standing in the Maquoketa Art Experience on Main Street in Maquoketa, Iowa. Artist Rose Franson has just opened a new show called In the Face of Illusion. It will be showing here through February 10th, and this exhibit is all about perception. It's full of portraits of people integrated with or interacting with optical illusions. It raises a lot of questions about how we perceive others and how we perceive ourselves. And the woman behind this exhibit is Rose Franson, and she's well known around the country, but she chose to return to her hometown of Maquoketa along with her husband, Charles Morris, Chuck Morris, who's also a well-known artist. Together, they've worked to make Maquoketa an artistic destination. They founded the Maquoketa Art Experience, a nonprofit offering art classes, exhibitions of great regional art, and a creativity cafe on Main Street. And we'll find out more about that in a little bit. But let's start with this exhibit. And Rose Franson is here with me now. Hello, Rose.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Well, we're glad you made the trip to Maquoketa.
All right. And also, Chuck is also with us here. And we're going to focus on Rose's artwork at first, but we'll talk more about your artwork as well. And I know that you play a big role in Rose's work as well.
That's true. We do collaborate. There's some collaboration in this show. But I tend to come in and give a little critique here and there. So, yeah.
All right. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. And so we just walked into the building. And I think the first thing that catches my eye is not the artwork on the wall, but some artwork on the ceiling. What am I looking at, Rose?
So it's an anamorphic projection, and it's a little bit of a play off the Constitution of the United States, or whatever. In fact, we left it a bit ambiguous for you to sort of decide we the.
So there's black tape on the ceiling, and, you know, odd shapes. You can't really tell what it is from most places in the room. But then as you're coming in and stand in one spot, you see this object. It says, we the, dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. And it's on kind of a scroll shape that becomes an impossible shape. The other end is folded in a weird way, which doesn't make sense. But.
So it's kind of an idea that the whole show may be about some impossibilities, ideas of impossible shapes or optical illusions and the like.
So where did the idea for this come from?
So the first bit of this idea came in November of 2016, and maybe that's enough of a clue. And it was started out as a reaction. I originally was kind of, I will say this, I was upset about where we were as a country and what some of the things we had decided for ourselves.
With the presidential election.
Yes. I'm trying not to say it directly. My mother says not to be too political. But this is actually the first time in my career I've really moved toward a political idea in a show. But that isn't where I like my work to live, like in a real, just like to stay in a contemporary period, because art actually has to be able to transcend time and even the time that it's made in. So when I thought about my reaction, and of course, the first thing I wanted to do was build a wall of all the marginalized people, right? And have you try to deny these people by painting them beautifully Fair enough. That was my first idea, was this wall of the people that we think maybe shouldn't be here. All right. Or we have questions about why they're here, or what they do in this country, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'm not just talking about the minorities, but I'm talking about all these forms of marginalization. That was my original idea. And I did not want to spend a year in, because to paint a show, it takes about a year. I didn't want to spend the year in reaction. And always maybe a hallmark of my career is always trying to find the part of the human experience that actually brings us up. So my thought was, if I just do a show in reaction, I'm not going to get there, right? I'm not going to go any deeper into maybe healing the wounds or moving toward. I mean, I can't say that I know how to heal the wounds, but I can actually ask interesting questions. So I'm get this idea, I'm going to build this wall. I start painting a couple of paintings of people. And I know I don't have the direction yet. I know there's something, but I haven't felt it. So one day I'm in the shower, and I'm washing my hair, and on my wall in my shower, we built it with these Indian slate tiles, the tiles from India, and they're all these different colors. People have seen them, right? I think I got them at Lowe's or Home Depot or something, right? And they're really beautiful, and I arranged them when I built the tile wall, so each one would be celebrated because this color is really cool. And so a lot of times when I'm looking at it, I'm seeing, whoa, there's a person there, and there's a person there, and there. And this day, I was seeing all these landscapes, and I was like, wow, because I know I almost always see people. Why am I seeing landscapes today? And I'm washing my hair, and I'm washing my hair, and I'm like, and where's the people? Where's the people? And I'm looking, and I'm like, what is that? It's like perception. It's like, why does it change one day into another thing? And I thought, oh my God, it's like what we bring to it, our human perception. I'm like, oh my God, I should do a show. I should put optical illusions. I was like, it just moved toward why. I thought, this is like an optical illusion. Like these are, and I thought, oh, I could paint that whole wall with, and that's how it came.
So the idea that you can look at the country and see one thing, but other people who may be well-meaning, good, intelligent people can look at the country and see something completely different.
Exactly. You know, and these changes of perspective, these changes of these things, and we will vote, we will act, we will believe, we will move on, these things, right? And so what is that? So that was the beginning, I would say, the beginning of my learning. But I started from there, and then I had to research optical illusions. And then I had to research what married optical illusions, what happens to us in optical illusions, into what happens to us as like a community, as group identity, as how we see each other, like why we need people in boxes, why we put ourselves in boxes, why we listen to echo chambers. Fair enough. And I started to see that there's evolutionary pressures that make us see optical illusions because our vision is so much part of our brain rather than what we're seeing. So in an optical illusion, something's happening in your brain that takes the information and says, wait, it sees it. The brain does so much of the work and your eyes are bringing it and they don't match. And so you're tricked. Okay. And it's because of this thing inside your own perspective. So what I thought, it was a lot like inside of us, this way of group identities, where we are there's also evolutionary pressures on us to be tribal, because we were like this for hundreds, thousands of years as hunter-gatherers. We mostly only hung out with 150 people. We knew everybody. If you did something that was horribly wrong, you were ostracized and punished, and you probably didn't make a new generation, right? But now we're forced in a global conversation, right, to have to deal with all these others that we are so used to actually having a separation from. And so the hardware in our brain forces us to still see optical illusions, and the hardware in our brain actually forces us into trying to put ourselves into smaller groups and say.
So an evolutionary predisposition to have this fear of the other.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. That's exactly, I couldn't have said it better.
So I look at The exhibition, and I see a wall. You stuck with that idea. All of these portraits go one into the other, and that's what you want me to be hit with a wall of images.
Exactly. I never get let go of the wall. I just change what the wall would give us, right? And I have a lot of. If you read the subtitles, or one of my friends called them captions, the titles of the paintings. You will get a sort of a clue about the narrative conversation that this painting may be addressing. So I'm marrying this image with this of this person with this particular optical illusion, and then deriving a narrative from those two things. So
where did the ideas for the different optical illusions come from? I mean, every painting has a different optical illusion involved in it. Where did you get those?
Like this one's the one that we've used it for a lot of our publicity. And I don't know if you can tell which the optical illusion. Do you know what it is on this one?
You're going to have to help me out.
This is an arch, and it doesn't look like it meets.
No. But so it does.
It does.
Because there's this line here that interrupts the line of the arch.
Right. So there you sort of started a phrase. Do you hear how you just described it? This arch, there's a line here that interrupts that arch. It does connect, but it doesn't connect. Now you take that idea and you think about human perception of how we see ourselves and how we see each other. Right? And you sort of, just that way you phrase it. And that's a way to actually look at the paintings and say, what's happening in this optical illusion? And then you put it on top of this person that's in the painting, and all of a sudden you're starting to get the narrative.
Right.
Fair enough? So yes, that arch doesn't meet, but it does meet, right? And so this one is, and it's two caryatids. I put two figures, this symbol of women carrying the weight of the arch on her two shoulders.
Carrying the weight of an occluded reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So carrying, she is responsible for carrying the weight of others' misperceptions.
Yes, of her.
Of her.
It's one of the things that happens to
us. To so many of us.
Exactly. And this fits into the hashtag dialogue that's happening right now. Fair enough?
Yeah.
But this isn't just like, you know, I'm not trying to be in anybody's face too much. They're subtle.
No, okay, wait a minute. Okay, yep. You're not trying to be in anybody's face too much. Let's move down to this one, because this strikes me as the most political of all.
That's good, because I think other ones are more political, but you haven't read the titles yet.
Right, well, maybe I just haven't gotten that far. So the picture is, the portrait is of a nude woman.
Yes.
Although she's censored.
Yes, and for Facebook. They're willing to censor paintings of breast, right?
Right.
But they won't censor Russian meddling in the U.S. election.
I've seen this controversy. And you have the symbols of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and email there. And the portrait itself says, this is not a nude.
Right.
And then it says, fake nudes, how to Trump the media.
Trump the media.
Right. In French.
French.
Right. So that seems overtly political.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I get that one.
You get that one. So there it is, right? So you can kind of come in and sort of, if you don't know maybe what the conversation's about, there will be ones that are more overt and there's some of them are much more subtle.
I'm talking with artist Rose Franson. We are at her new exhibition at the Maquoketa Art Experience. It's called In the Face of Illusion, and it will be on exhibit through February 10th. We'll talk more in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now we're at the Maquoketa Art Experience with artists Rose Franson and Chuck Morris. They've just opened a new show called In the Face of Illusion, and the show is full of portraits of people integrated with optical illusions. It raises a lot of questions about how we perceive others and how we see ourselves. And right now we're standing in front of a large portrait. It's kind of a periwinkle color in the background with lines receding into the distance. In the forefront, there's an older looking man. Behind him, three armed guards, a repeating pattern.
So that's great. See?
Okay.
But you bring.
So these are actually, this is border patrol.
Possibly.
And there's that wall again.
There's that wall again.
The distortion of force used by some who proclaim faith in the one who said the meek shall inherit the earth.
Yeah.
So we're also talking about religion here as well.
Okay. Possibly.
Possibly.
But this is a little bit about, I think this might be a really good thing too. Wasn't it Charlottesville? So I think that goes to there, where we had the guns and the whole, on the streets in the United States of America. People thinking it's okay to carry weapons. The last time I saw that was in Guatemala City during their whole crazy wars that they had in the 90s and the 80s. Remember that? And I saw kids walking around with machine guns, and I was terrified. Like, this is the way we want to live in the United States of America? Crazy to me. And so that's why I call it the distortion by some who proclaim faith. Because there's, if you research a little bit of some of the people that are in this, this may be so.
What do you want people to take away from this experience?
A doorway into a conversation and a doorway into our echo chambers and what we surround ourselves with and how we want to define ourselves and how we simply want to define each other. That each of these people, so like I called this guy Meek, right? And when you look at him, I really think you get a feeling of a meekness in this person, and this is what you're afraid of. So if you could marry those two things together, like, what are we so afraid of? You know, what am I so afraid of? So when you're tricked by the optical illusions, there's this feeling of, wow, I can't believe that happened to me. Oh, I can't. Like, here, this is a really good one. If you get up close, you see that those are just squares, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you step back, it warps. So you see how it's warped, right? And so we call this one us and them, warping the peripheral. So I feel like this person could be a person we may see on the margins of, for many reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like if you marry this idea of the being tricked, the trick of the optical illusion, right, that you're tricked with this person, all right, then possibly we can look at this, the dialogue that we're having as a nation, as a country, with a little more possibly amusement and a little more humility. So one of these paintings is about ageism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a few of them are about ageism, which is another thing. So you see, I'm kind of trying to hit all of these conversations that keep us distant from each other. So you see from a distance, yeah, how that one's all like askew.
It looks almost diagonal. The like, lines are almost, yeah.
Right. And when you walk up closer,
they're straight.
They're straight. And also you see her, right? And you're looking at this beautiful, like, oh, this woman, right? And this, and it says, a skewed view rendered squarely by closer proximity. You know, so that's a really good one to sort of get an idea of the conversation. So the closer you are, I feel like, to an older person, the less you're able to put them into this category, they're an older person, blah, 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 blah,
right,
that you hear. You know, when you get up close, all of a sudden, and that, I guess I would say,
they're a human.
Exactly. That is the theme of this entire conversation, really. It's very, very hard to be a jerk to somebody if you have to face them face to face and do it, right? You're not going to. We hardly would in this country. If the person that you're writing something crappy to on the computer, you knew their name and you were going to have dinner with them tomorrow night, you would be less likely to write what you're going to write. And we need to have the national conversation live in that civility. So if that's where we can get it, if we can just remember that each of these people that we are putting in these categories, or these boxes, or these, the way you said it earlier, if we remember each of them are a human being that we just don't know, okay? That's it. You just don't know. You would have a very different perspective. When I painted Portrait of Makokota, I really learned that sitting across from each person, that if I had their life, their life, with all the circumstances and everything that they had, I would be hard-pressed to have lived a very different life from them. So how can I judge them, right? How can I judge that? So it's only by this distance, only by these optics of identity or these optical illusions that we can actually, these tricks of our brains and these tricks of perception, that we can actually hold on to these beliefs so fervently that we would actually throw somebody under the bus, right? You would never do it, ever, if they were sitting across from you, if you were holding their hand. Here's another thing I learned from Porch of Makokoto. When I went to the grocery store and somebody bumps into you and you're like, "Whoa, you," you know, right? I'm not remembering that person may have just run through the store to get medicine because their child is vomiting in the car, all right? And they ran over me because they were in a different context, all right? I'm just having my shopping thing. So I label that person jerk, okay? But if I was the person running into the store and bumping into somebody with the same thing, I know that I'm not a jerk, right? Can I give that to the other person? Can that be my default first? Can I say, "Oh, maybe I don't know their situation, why they're doing that," instead of saying jerk, right?
Assume positive intent.
Exactly. What if we move through the world with a positive intent? Imagine that everybody is trying to make the best choices possible for themselves and forgiving them when they don't.
You're making a powerful statement with this show. Do you feel like, you know, and you want to bridge this divide that we have, do you feel like you're reaching and can reach both sides of the divide with this artistic statement?
I would love, listen, if I were to never have painted it, I would never even begin to find out. I would love to have the, if I'm not, come tell me, right? And I'm not going to bridge the divide. I'm going to contribute to building the bridge, because this can only happen through all of us, through more of us. And in our statement about the show, it's like group identities are also strong, powerful forces that we as a nation can do amazing things. And in my talk the other night, I said, what would we do if we could just get over some of these ones that we thought were already done, right? What would we create as a human being? What could we do for the world if we quit dividing ourselves? But granted, there are evolutionary pressures that make us do this division, just like there are evolutionary pressures that make us see optical illusions. And until we know that, until we become aware of that, we won't be kind enough to the other or ourselves to forgive ourselves for failing.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm at the Makokoto Art Experience with Rose Franson, well-known artist around the country, with Chuck Morris, her husband, also a very well-known artist. And Chuck, just describe what this is.
It was the former Osterhaus Pharmacy, which was five storefronts combined. And Makokoto Art Experience moved into this space, I forget the year now.
2009.
Mm-hmm. And then also the idea was hopefully to bring artists to Makokoto. There's still storefronts available if any artists are out there. But yeah.
When we met in New York City, he always had felt, you want to say that part? You'd always felt that there was too much artist moved?
I felt like it was kind of a crime that culture migrated to the big cities and we lost all that in the small towns. So when I heard, you know, I met Rose, she was painting in Central Park, and I heard that she and her parents had bought the old City Hall and had a gallery there, and I said, "You're my hero."
So. I don't remember that, but we eventually wound up somehow from Central Park, wound up dating and now married. And now the Old City Hall Gallery is totally a collaboration between Chuck and myself and my parents, I would say.
And Rose, you grew up here in Makokoto.
I did. But I was living in New York City and I did not want to come back. But the Porch of Makokoto Project brought us back and Chuck helped me stay.
And Chuck, where are you from originally?
From Springfield, Illinois.
All right, so you're a Midwesterner too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you helped Rose stay. What was it that made you want to be in Makokoto?
Well, honestly, we're all about work, and so we have great spaces here to work in. It's quiet. There aren't a whole lot of distractions.
And life is easy here. I mean, it's easy to get to the grocery store. It's easy to get the post office, the bank, and there, you know the faces and you know the people, and you can actually have a friendly. Here we order the same thing at Main Street. We don't even tell them who we are. They know, and they even know our special wrappings and all of this stuff. Right? There's something. Go ahead.
Yeah. Also, it's just beautiful around here. The countryside around Maquoketa is fantastic and very easy to get out, and go for a walk, and go to the caves and
bike ride.
Get
and
to the river.
So. I also think that the possibility of influence, you could actually have a great influence in a smaller place, and it's more possible, so you can feel it. And so these conversations, so I grew up here. I moved away many times, and I've lived in other parts of the country, and I've come back, and I started painting very differently, nice paintings, and I have watched this community grow all the way to accepting even a challenging show like this. And so it's possible that you can grow and the community can grow with you, right? And this is that you can have, and you can have these conversations and feel and have to meet that person again and again. You don't just have this conversation, have it be a one-off and move to the next person. Like in New York City, boom, next person, next person, next person. Here you're forced into relationship, and that's an interesting challenge, and it's interesting to try to have an influence when you have to maintain a relationship.
When I walked in here, actually the first artwork that I saw was not yours. It's artwork done by Maquoketa High School students, and I think about little Rose growing up in Maquoketa, and how did you, what gave you the ability to dream of becoming the artist that you are growing up in a small town in Iowa?
I did not have the resources that we are providing for the high school artist to come in and show at the same time, maybe with work at the caliber that I'm working with. I had no idea that you could grow up and do what I'm doing when I was in Maquoketa. I actually left here and went to art school in Chicago thinking my biggest dream was, oh, maybe I'll try to get on a cover of a magazine, because you would see illustrations done by artists on magazines. So my possibilities or dreams for myself are very limited compared to what kids now have. They know now that they can grow up and do this too, because some kid from Maquoketa is also doing it. And maybe I look like an old lady to them now, but you can come from a small town and do. And be an artist. And that is one thing I always say to kids when they say, I want to be an artist. I'm like, great. It's a great life. You should try it. And you know, and so, and I know that they can do it, right? I know that that's possible for them. And I have a chance to tell them it's possible, to believe in that possibility for themselves. And why is it good to be an artist? It's good to be an artist because as a human being, you put yourself in the questions of life. And that is where we contribute. I can't say that this show is going to have to build that bridge or to change anything, but I can add my drop to the conversation and hope that drop by drop by drop we change the ocean. You can only hope to have an influence, but at least as an artist you get to have that hope.
I want to walk across the street to the old City Hall Gallery, which is where both of your work is on display, right?
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Yeah, let's head out. It's a long commute from the art experience over here to the gallery.
Yes, indeed. So this we've been working on our building too, and it's stucco over brick, when did they do that, in the 50s or 60s or something?
Yeah.
But it was white and tan, was it?
Peach,
yeah. So we repaired all the stucco and have painted it what we feel are attractive colors. So.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful.
In here we have paintings that I've done of children where I paint them into their artwork. So they actually do paintings first, and I figure out a way to incorporate them into their scene. So these are acrylic and very detailed, but I couldn't have the kids sit like that for an extended period. So
yeah, good luck with that if you try.
So I had pose them and take photographs and work from the photographs for these.
That's magical, though. It must be so fun to reveal the picture not just to the family but to the child.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's great. Yeah, fun reactions to it, definitely.
Is this your work as well? So these are cartoons.
They are, basically. Behind you is what this whole thing started with, which is an icon that I painted, kind of traditional icon style with egg tempera, gold leaf background.
Non-traditional in another sense, because the man in the picture who looks as if he would be a shepherd or an apostle or something like that, he's winking and pointing at us.
Yeah, and his staff is kind of a question mark shape, and his name is Saint Placebo, and he's kind of the patron. I felt like the placebo effect needed representation that we could relate to better. So, well, you can see there's all kinds of, I actually did a lot of study about the placebo effect, and I've got this poster here. It talks about all the findings of placebo effects. Two placebo pills work better than one. Bigger pills work better. So do colored pills. Syringes work even better. I could go on.
Fake surgery is amazing. This is true?
This is true.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to have fake surgery.
Fake performance enhancers make bike riders faster. So, all kinds of stuff.
I'm talking with Chuck Morris and Rose Franson in the old City Hall Gallery, the gallery where they display a lot of their artwork here in Maquoketa. We'll continue our conversation and move to their studio in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're in Maquoketa, Iowa. We've been to the Maquoketa Art Experience with Rose Franson and Chuck Morris, artists who live in Maquoketa. We've seen the new show, In the Face of Illusion, that will be open at the Art Experience through February 10th. We've been to the Old City Hall Gallery, where we can see Rose and Chuck's work, a lot of it spanning many years of their careers. And now we've taken another little walk to Rose's studio.
Okay, so we've walked a few blocks down, and now we're at the studio. Outside, there is a sign that says Assembly of God, Sunday School, 9:45.
It's good camouflage.
So obviously this used to be a church.
Yes, we bought them. So 8 months.
But you kept the sign.
Yes. eight months before this place came up for sale, I walked by it and had not really noticed it before, and I said, Chuck, if this building ever comes up for sale, we gotta buy it, right? So we own the Old City Hall, which was the fire station, and there was a dance floor up in the second, it was the council chambers, and now we own a church, so all we need to complete our collection of Maquoketa properties, maybe a real house. we don't have a home. Yeah. I suppose that would make us a Maquoketan.
All right, so here we are.
How long have you guys been married?
Oh, what would it be?
14 years.
14 sounds good.
Yeah, I think it'll be 15, and the next one's 15, if you can count.
So Rose painted my portrait at the Iowa State Fair for the Faces of Iowa State project that the University Museums put together. And one of the most striking things about that experience, there were a lot of striking things about that experience, but after Rose had been working for a while, Chuck, you came, just popped by, and gave her some suggestions, started critiquing the work and sharing ideas. How did that part of your collaborative life develop? Because I can imagine a lot of husbands and wives wouldn't like their spouse to come in and critique their work.
Yeah. Well, early on, we actually did quite a few collaborations where we would paint together, even out on location by the Natural History Museum in New York. We did a painting of the sculpture of Teddy Roosevelt on the horse, and
I don't remember which one.
It was the Native American. Native American head on top. Anyway, it was a collaboration where we're both just kind of dancing around this one canvas painting together. So that experience probably led naturally into critiquing. We also find that when you're doing a portrait, it's really good to get distance from it in order to see objectively, because you start fooling yourself into thinking it's right when it's not. So there's all kinds of tricks for doing that. You can hold a mirror up to it or just get back far from it. But having someone else look is obviously really helpful. So I come in and say what I see.
It's interesting, because when I was like painting your portrait, and what happens in that dynamic is I become really engaged in our conversation and I'm painting, but a lot of me is forgetting about the painting. And when Chuck comes in, he puts in this stabilizing element between me and the model, or me and you. And all of a sudden we remember that we have this other mission to actually finish this painting, and you need a mouth and a neck, right? Which isn't usually painted at that point. And so we found during Portrait of Makokata that balanced out the painting session, because it brought us back to our mission to make a painting. Because Portrait of Makokata, and I think even at Iowa State, this idea of this opportunity to have a conversation or to deeply meet another person or possibly deeply meet another person is this sort of unsuspected, unplanned for delight or result. And now that I kind of know that can happen, I kind of forget a little bit about the painting. And Chuck is like this grounding influence. And it's great, because then the model's a little afraid of Chuck. And so they start posing better. I know you posed much better when Chuck came in. We both quit talking for a minute, and we both got a little more painting done. But I feel like also what we used to do on dates is when we were first dating, play games with art. So we
pass it back and forth, pass a drawing back and forth, and see what one does after the other.
And we go to in a bar or coffee shop and just pass it back and forth. We would lay big pieces of paintings on the floor, like big canvases on the floor, and then do the whole painting together, you know, like try and play. It's sort of our form of fun. And I think this whole collaboration thing was built out of that foundation. Like, my weaknesses were softened, and my strengths were heightened. And I think the same would be for Chuck.
How does it work on the other side? I haven't had the opportunity to watch you work, Chuck. So how does Rose assist you?
The same way, in terms of coming in and seeing where I might not be objective. But also on an abstract level, not just capturing a likeness, it's amazing to me that I don't know if it's because we share a very similar aesthetic, or if there are just universal principles to art, to, you know, what looks right within a given context. That we'll agree. She'll say something, looking at a piece that I'm working on, this needs a little something right here. It has nothing to do with likeness. It's just maybe a little color or a shape here. And I'll have just seen that, or I'll look and I'll absolutely agree. You know, so that's amazing.
Do you always agree?
No.
We don't. And I think that I take it a little better than Chuck. Partly because
he's wrinkling his eyebrows.
I do. I do. I think I take it a little bit better. But what if
I present it a little bit better?
That's true.
That's it.
I think he's right.
Oh, okay.
I think he's right about that. I think he's right about that, because I want it done quickly. You know, I was telling somebody the other night that I'm like a puppet when Chuck says you need to do this so easily. He can just move my strings and I can do it. And so he can see it pretty quickly. And I think that it's not this, that translation doesn't go like, I'm like, no. I mean, like that. And he doesn't translate as quickly as I do. So the direction.
We also had a lot of practice with Portrait of Makokata, the landscape, where it was painted on all these individual panels in the studio here. And Rose's had to go back and forth between these landscape panels and try and line up a cloud here on this panel to a cloud on another panel. And I sat in the viewing chair with a laser pointer to my eye and saying, okay, this needs to go here, trying to communicate those things from a distance, you know, abstract little things. So we've had a lot of practice.
Probably more practice on me than me on him. But I would say what I do for Chuck, if anything, so he's actually in the middle of his next piece, like beginning to, the conception part has already kind of formulated, but now he's in the realization part. And I am really, my skill set, my strength might be taking an idea and making it happen.
Yep.
So he says, yep, right? Now I have to say, I have to show you this, Charity.
There's some visuals.
There's
visual.
A drawing on my door, and this is Chuck, and you know his cartoon style, right?
Yeah.
Self-portrait, and it says, yep, 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 right?
It makes it easy as I'm leaving. You know, I can just point to that.
He points to that sign. Yep, yep, yep.
So something else that I observed when you were painting me is that Chuck not only came in and critiqued the work, mm-hmm. He also made you drink.
Yes.
And eat.
Yes.
And rest.
Yes.
So tell me about this dynamic.
Well, when I was painting the portraits at the State Fair, I'm totally on the game of painting the paintings, and I don't take care of myself. I would say one of Chuck's strengths is he's very good at remembering to take care of himself, and so he always
good job staying alive,
no,
Chuck.
Yes, I don't need a reminder. No.
So I always tease that he's going to definitely outlive me by a really long time because I'm the one that doesn't sleep. He gets plenty of sleep every day, right? And so it's sort of his skill set.
Maybe a little more grounded in reality. Is that what I'm hearing?
Could be, yeah. Yeah. Not so fully absorbed in the work, yeah.
Yeah. I think
How did
great.
You drink and eat before Chuck?
I ate a lot of chocolate-covered peanuts. No, I did. I mean, I gained weight. My friends would say, you gained weight since you got married. I was like, well, that's because somebody's reminding me to eat. No. But anyway, I don't know. It sort of, I think at the fair and those kind of situations, we set that up, that he has, because I do get so involved in that dynamic with the model and the subject and what we're doing, that I want to paint to every last minute or the 50th last minute. I want to keep going so I can get just a little bit more. And that is kind of his role there, is to regulate.
So you work together clearly really intensely. I mean, most of us who are in marriages or relationships, we have our separate lives as well. Your lives are not that separate. Mm-hmm. That seems like that would be challenging at times.
It's not. For some reason, it's not. We work really well together and very lucky, just very lucky.
When we were working the other night, and that was, I don't know if it was one of the 20-hour days that we put in, we were both like hanging the, both of us worked on the anamorphic projection.
Until 6 a.m., we were up on a scaffold putting tape up on the ceiling. So it doesn't always work really nicely. But
we did have a couple of squabbles. But both of us said, and it was Thanksgiving day, uh-huh. And both of us said, isn't this what you'd rather be doing? And we're like, yeah.
Rather than
anything else.
Anything else.
And we were both having a blast. And it was fun, right?
Yeah, totally.
So a big part of it, and we are riding fortune's sails. I mean, we're on the winds of fortune right now because it's a great collaboration, and we don't forget that we're very lucky. I did buy another building for my main studio though, so you are in another space. I mean, we were, for like the first 5 years, we were in the same building in the same studio, and this is probably better because I think the main thing we might fight about is what we listen to all day long, you know. Because I like different music, and I also like listening to you, Charity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so do I.
So do you. but you're on the morning. But you had
right.
To
you're
me.
Never up early
you
enough
had
to hear
get
me
you in the evening. Right. But actually, I can get you on. You can get you on your podcast, so you right. can get it later. I can listen to you on my own, which I really like. I say, oh, I'm listening to Charity now. So anyway.
So you. You have the studio space. You have the gallery. Mm-hmm. You have the art experience. You have so many, it feels like you have so many projects underway. How do you decide what's next? What drives that?
Well, so I would say a lot of it is what is next on the calendar. Like, this show took priority, and it's true, this show took a little bit priority away from Chuck focusing on his work. So right as soon as we get done here, Chuck has a patent that he's going to finish. He's in the last final reviews of a patent, and one of the patents is for a project that he worked on. So, like, when you were posing for me at the state fair, Chuck was off most of the time at the fair working on his projects on the computer. He might have been writing his ideas for this patent and stuff like that. So it seems like he's just there at my beck and call, but it's far from it. We set it up. We've totally planned that he can work when we're in situ like that. And even at Ames, he was working on his own projects and then would come in and advise me. But so I think that's your next thing, is you're going to do your patent?
Yeah, I can't really say much about it, but yeah. Yep.
So, and as the person who knows when to eat and when to drink and when to sleep, do you sort of chart the course for when things happen as well, as far as projects?
Not really. No, that's collaborative. Yeah, we talk about what we're doing today and, yeah, plan out our day, plan out our week.
Yeah, I think my career is a little more scheduled than Chuck's career. So it sort of orients us. You know, what, like, we already know what 2018 looks like, what might be required at certain points in 2018. And then we're looking at what we're going to do in 2019. So I think that kind of sort of dominates a lot of our plans. But, you know, when you're an artist and you like to work 12 hours a day, you got a lot of time to explore and set a lot of your own schedule. You know, when I painted Portrait of Makoko, it was the first time in 25 years I had to show up at the same place every day at the same time. It was fascinating to me. And I learned so much respect for people who have a real job, you know, because my job has always been whatever way the wind blows. I mean that literally, when you're outside painting landscapes, if it was a sunny day, don't invite me to dinner until it's dark. And I would tell people, well, I can't come unless it's, because my day is run by the sunlight. My day is run by the painting that I'm in the process of doing.
I feel like walking from the Makokata Art Experience to the Old City Hall Gallery to your studio, that I'm walking through a different kind of work of art that is in progress right now. Do you think about your lives in Makokata and this Rose and Chuck world that you're creating? Do you feel like that's a work of art as well?
Yeah, I mean, and we hope it develops and we could see it becoming much more. Yeah, it'd be great if more artists came to Makokata, and if that helped to rebuild the community, that would be wonderful.
Like a grander, larger project. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend from Chicago was here for the opening, and she was in the wine bar, and she's an artist, and this space is brand new. It's been open 3 weeks. And the owner came up and was talking with us. And my girlfriend said, do you know that you're making art here? And I think that's what you're implying, right? That this building, that you've created this atmosphere, that this is art, that you're allowing people to have this experience in this town. And I feel like that might be a way of answering your question. I feel it has these parts, these smaller parts, but this bigger whole, this bigger movement. And because it's been so long-lived, like earlier, the question of the kids, you know, so the kids that were painting with me in the neighborhood that would come up and hang out with me while I painted back behind the gallery in my garden space, you know, now they're in their 20s and they're coming by and they're, some of them say, I'm pursuing art, or I'm, you know, and so it's sort of like, even intergenerational, it's still happening.
Well, Rose and Chuck, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. This edition produced by Emily Woodbury. We visited Makokata today to see the new art exhibit In the Face of Illusion open at the Makokata Art Experience through February 10th. Also, the Makokata Art Experience holiday celebration will be on Sunday, December 10th, 4 to 7 p.m., a fundraiser for this institution. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.